Good morning, everybody. We're joined live with everybody on the North Side, North Service this morning. We are devoting our summer weekends to look at and learn from the book of Daniel. So we come to week number four. So in your bulletins is provided a text. It'll also be on the side screens. And I'll ask you to follow along as I read. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, "Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. But even if he doesn't," that's what we talked about last week, "even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue that you have set up." Nebuchadnezzar was so furious, true to form, right? We've seen. With the three, that his face became distorted with rage. He commanded that the furnace be heated seven times hotter than usual. Then he ordered some of the strongest men of his army to bind the three of them, throw them into the blazing furnace. So they tied them up, threw them into the furnace, fully dressed. And notice the writer wants to give you this little detail. Their pants, turbans, robes, and other garments. And because the king in his anger had demanded such a hot fire in the furnace, the flames killed the soldiers as they threw the three men in. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were securely tied. They fell into the roaring flames. But suddenly Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement and exclaimed to his advisors, "Didn't we tie up three men, throw them into the furnace?" "Yes, your majesty, we certainly did," they replied. "Look," Nebuchadnezzar shouted, "I see a fourth man. There are four men, unbound, walking around in the fire, unharmed. And the fourth looks like a god." Then Nebuchadnezzar came as close as he could to the door of the flaming furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So the three of them stepped out of the fire. Wouldn't you love to see this on video? Man, I'm telling you. Then the high officers, officials, governors, and advisors crowded around them and saw that the fire had not touched them. Not a hair on their heads was singed. And their clothing, the writer wants us to know, was not scorched. And there was no smell of smoke. Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego." I bet you'd get it right after this event. "He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted in him. They defied the king's command and were willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make this decree, if any people, whatever their race or nation or language, speaks a word against the God of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, they will be torn limb from limb." He loves to just tear people apart. He's got to get that in somewhere, doesn't he? "And their houses will be turned into heaps of rubble. There is no other God who can rescue like this." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego to even higher positions in the province of Babylon. Yippee for our God. Yippee for our God. There was a tragic explosion that occurred on a Russian submarine a number of years ago called the Kursk. 118 men died from that event. 23 of them survived for several hours later because they were sealed off in a separate sort of compartment. While they are waiting to die, literally at the bottom of the ocean, The 23 that were there, one of them in particular, his name was Dmitry Kolesnikov, 27 years old, 27. He was a captain on this vessel. And they found on his body, he had written a final letter to his wife. And they found notes, by the way, on most of the men that they had taken and sealed in plastic. And in his letter to his wife, they took two words and they were placed in a frame that was put next to his coffin at the memorial that they had for him. And the two words were, mustn't despair, mustn't despair. Now, I wonder what he was trying to say. Were they words for himself that he would hope against hope that he would survive this ordeal? Maybe they were words that were for his wife, to help her move on beyond what he was probably sure was his inevitable death. But whatever it was though there was this deep desire in all of these men to, in their final moment, send a message. They wanted someone to know their story. I've read quite a bit about the Warsaw Ghetto and the Jewish prisoners that were held there by the Nazis, and the events are that many people there would literally starve to death, and daily they would be taken to rail cars. Talk about a furnace, literally to be taken to a furnace. And that while people are in their final moments of life, they found shoved in little crevices in walls, crooks and crannies just all over the place. They would just almost as they're walking to their death, they would take little notes and write messages, leave notes, in the hopes that someone would find them. It's like there's something about human beings that when they face a final moment, and all the things, by the way, that we think that life is about, reputation, success, wealth, they mean absolutely nothing. And a person is left with what they really believe. We spend our whole lives pretending that that final moment will never come, but it will. And let me ask you, if it were for you today, if this was the final moment for all of us, what would you write? What message would you send? What story is it that you would want told? Well, that final moment comes for these three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they are probably about the age, probably younger than Dmitry Kolesnikov. But they are, as we have looked at the last few weeks, they are young men of phenomenal promise. They are the finest. They are the best. They have received the highest of education, and they have very early in life risen to positions of prominence in the world's most powerful nation. You can imagine they're full of hopes and dreams. They've looked forward to meeting someone, to marry, to establish a family, to live deeply fulfilling lives, and to do noble things for God and for people. For them, their final moment, the death that is before them, is avoidable. All they have to do is bend their knee, bow their heads, and say the right words, and this nightmare for them is over. They'll get up and walk into places of honor, status, and power. They are facing unimaginable pain, and yet one word and one action, and they're just going to live the good life, but they won't say it and they won't do it. Nebuchadnezzar as only he can. He orders them to choose life or death, and they choose death. The God we serve is able. We talked about that last week. The capability of our great God. Our God is able. But even if he doesn't, we want you to understand your majesty. We will never bow. We will never serve your gods. And if necessary, if march us to our death, but we will never bow to your gold statue. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, surprisingly, as we've studied him, he's going to call them to himself, and he's going to try, he's never done this, he's going to try the soft guy, nice approach. So the three of them are standing before him, and he says, okay, you guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the whole thing over again, just for you. Now, the writer clearly wants us to know how taken Nebuchadnezzar is with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They don't want to lose these guys. So he says, here's what we'll do. We'll play the music again. The heralds will make an announcement, and this will be your cue. You bow, you join everybody else, bow before the gold statue that I have created, and everything will be just great. They respond very respectfully. Read our lips. No. The answer is no. And Nebuchadnezzar, as only he can, he goes crazy. In fact, the writer says how whatever it looks like, his face contorts. It gets twisted, expressing his anger. He loses all control and orders that the furnace be turned up 7 times. Now, question, was that necessary? 7 times? I mean, let's say the furnace is at 1,500 degrees. Is it necessary for the thing to go to 15,000 degrees, whatever it may be? Crank it up, he orders. You ever been burnt by a match or a fire? Searing, instant pain. And you will never forget it. To deliberately burn someone to death is historically one of the most inhumane and cruel forms of execution. It is treating a living, breathing human being as a mere object. It's like we're just going to throw a stick into the fire. There won't even be a corpse that remains for them to mourn, which was a big deal in the ancient world. This is exactly what the three of them are facing, and it's all avoidable. One word and one action, and it'll save their lives. Nebuchadnezzar orders some of his big guys to bind their bodies and to throw them in the furnace. The furnace is so hot that it kills them even upon approaching upon approaching it, they die on the spot. And the writer wants to give us another little clue. If you want to know what power out of control looks like, we wonder what the dictator of North Korea might do. And the answer is anything. Because Nebuchadnezzar is so out of control, he is so enraged that he loses some of his finest employees, and it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even register with him. This is not a story about a a small little campfire where we're going to roast some marshmallows and make some s'mores. This is a raging inferno, a no-hope kind of fire. And this is their final moment. They have been faithful to the bitter end. And you know that as they come to this furnace, as they approach it, they've got to be filled with a holy courage, but also with immense fear. They've watched the men who have bound them and carried them to the entrance of this die on the spot. And then they are going to be thrown or shoved into this fire. You can imagine they would only grimace waiting for this searing pain to occur, but it never comes. It never happens. Suddenly, they sort of, you can imagine they're looking at each other. No one's even broken out on a sweat. There's not a single hair on any of them that has been singed. And they are no longer tied up, but they are walking around freely looking for beach chairs to sit a spell. And to their surprise, Nebuchadnezzar is the one who calls it out. There's a fourth person who's joined the furnace club. Somebody joined them. Somebody who can appear out of nowhere. Somebody who can cheat death. And somebody, what an interesting description. Someone who looks like a son of God. Jesus? Maybe. This sure sounds like something he could pull off. This was the greatest small group meeting ever in the history of small groups. Wouldn't you love to have heard the curriculum that they had in this group? What do you think they said to each other? I think the fourth man in the furnace sat him down, said, "Gentlemen, I want you to look me in the face. Look me in my eyes. I could not be more proud. I want you to know that your courage and your faith has inspired me so deeply. And I want you to know that the smile on the Father's face has never been bigger." What do you think they said to the fourth man in the furnace? I think they poured out. I think they expressed a kind of love and adoration and wonder and worship like they never had before. See, the furnace looked like this was going to be the end of their lives. And it ends up being the greatest thing that ever happened to them. It was the can't-miss event of their lives. The furnace will end up being the place where they will meet God. And oh, how they had prayed. And oh, how they had hoped that God would deliver them from the furnace. But God decided to deliver them in the furnace. And God does that sometimes. Sometimes God delivers from the furnace. And sometimes God delivers in the furnace. And this time, God said, "I'm going to meet you in the furnace." Jesus is a furnace kind of guy. Complete commitment to Jesus Christ, which we talked about last week, can look so scary, can look so dangerous, it can look so painful. But it turns out that it's the safest place of all to be. Jesus says to you and to me, "Come and follow me, and I'll meet you in the furnace." Now, the writer goes into detail to give us some information about their clothes. It's certainly to give us something beyond a fashion statement of the day. But I think the writer wants us to understand the extent of the miracle that has occurred. Not only are they rescued, not only are they safe, but God has saved even their clothes. Nebuchadnezzar will then congratulate them for defying his authority. And they aren't just restored to their original places of leadership, but God has lifted them to new heights. Can you imagine after this, the days, the weeks, the months after this? I'll bet every time they saw each other, it was just like, dude, I am so glad we didn't cave. Man, thanks for the support. I am so glad that we didn't let each other give in to fear. They would have missed their encounter with the fourth man in the furnace. Do you think when they got older? I'll bet when they got older, they had a day, it's sort of like, you know, we can mark our phones and certain events they'll be a reminder. I'll bet on their calendar there was a constant reminder all the time. A furnace date that they just celebrated. You think maybe they got out their clothes, maybe they got out their robes, put on their robes, sat together. Boy, I've gained a little weight since then. And they got those clothes out. And it helped them remember when they were young what God had done. But I can tell you this much, they never forgot. In fact, can you believe that this story is still being told in places like this even today? If you ever trust God enough to go to the place that looks so frightening and dangerous, and you refuse to bend your knee to any other God, and you go to the place that it looks like it's the end of you, and He meets you there, you will be marked forever. Going into the furnace looked like it was going to be the worst day of their lives, and it turns out to be the greatest day they would ever live. And ironically, the furnace, the place of greatest death, becomes the safest place of all. How can that be possible? Because God was there. See, sometimes God delivers from the furnace, and sometimes God delivers in the furnace. As I reflected on this, in fact, Alex, if you will come as we prepare to close this morning, I want to submit to you. I want you to think about this week. I think maybe the greatest danger that I face, I think maybe the greatest danger that you face as a follower of Jesus Christ is that we end up making the primary goal of our life about furnace avoidance. Furnace avoidance. So listen to our prayers. God, deliver me from all the pain. Rescue me from inconvenience, discomfort, and of course, any kind of suffering. God, make my life smooth, comfortable, pleasant, without any bumps. God, you make it all go away. Now, observation. In my life, I've prayed that many times. God has never answered that prayer. You think I'd get a clue to pray a different kind of prayer? The Apostle Paul prays in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He says, whatever it was, he just says, look, something's been sent by Satan, and it is this thorn in the flesh, which we are not 100% sure what it was, but just save to say, he didn't like it. And he says, three times I begged God. I begged God. This is the Apostle Paul. And three times, guess what God said? No. No. And no again. But he did say, Paul, I'll meet you in the furnace. See, the entire story of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego depends on them showing up for the furnace. So I want to ask you, where on God's calendar is there a date that has your name written down? And it says, I'll meet you in the furnace. But it will depend on whether you show up or not. Or will you bend your knee to the wrong God? So I want us to consider doing something pretty dangerous together. I want us to consider to stop praying for less heat and pray a rather dangerous kind of prayer that says, God, teach us, show us your presence, the kind of presence that meets people in the furnace. Could it be that the statues in our culture, in our world, involve gods with names like comfort? And there's nothing wrong with comfort. But they are gods that are named ease, security, and success. I wonder if far too many people, far too many Christians, in far too many churches, have gotten the idea that to follow Jesus Christ is all about an easier life for me. How many heroes of the faith in the Bible lived easy lives? Not a one. Where did Jesus ever say, follow me and you're going to get the biggest house, the most attractive spouse, and your life will be nothing but a succession of easy days? Jesus said, follow me and you will get outrageous joy and outrageous trouble all the time. Jesus said, follow me and the way will be sacrifice, surrender, servanthood, and death to self. We are here today because of thousands of average men and women, just like you and I, who were willing to go to the furnace, and God did not forget a single one of them, and neither will he forget you. God says to you what he says to Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, to Daniel, to all the prophets of the Old Testament, to every character in the New Testament. I will meet you in the furnace. They had their day, and this is your day. This is my day. I don't know what furnace it is that you face today. I don't know what furnace you will face in the future, but I can promise you this much. I know who will meet you in the furnace. Praise be this day to the fourth man in the furnace. Let's sing together.